WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Go to sleep, you little baby. Go to sleep. Go to sleep, you little baby.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Your mama's gone away and your dad's gonna stay. Don't leave nobody but the baby.
When I became a parent, I discovered the true meaning of the cliche, sleeps like a baby. It means you wake up every 2 hours crying and poopy. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And it's now the second week of the WNYC Clock Your Sleep Project. We want you to track your sleep with us to understand how New York sleeps and how we might all sleep better. To join the over 3,000 people already doing this with us, go to WNYC.org/sleep. And each week in April on this show, as part of the station-wide project, we're going to tackle sleep in different stages of life. We call it sleep cycles through the life cycle. So today we're talking about young kids, their parents, and how they can all get better sleep. And so far, WNYC has found in our Clock Your Sleep project that people living with children of any age are waking up a full hour earlier on average than those not living with children, not too surprising. But they are getting about the same amount of sleep, at least according to what you're reporting, because they're going to sleep earlier and sleeping more efficiently. I don't know about that as a parent of two. But we also found that people who sleep with a child in their bed, a.k.a. in the family bed, sleep about 15 fewer minutes than those who don't. So parents of young kids, let's say four and under, for the sake of this conversation, call us up with your stories about your kids and sleep. 212-433-WNYC. You can also call with your questions if you're seeking advice, because we'll have an expert here in a minute. We know there are different attitudes about how and where and how long your baby should be sleeping. 212-433-WNYC. And then once they become toddlers, a whole new set of questions about how, where, and how long come up. So call us up, 212-433-WNYC. Are you one of the many trying to get the child out of the family bed? At what age of babyhood do you do that? Are you in the throes of sleep training? Is your sleep completely messed up and it's affecting your parenting and the rest of your life? 212-433-WNYC. And we'll try to hash it out and come to some useful nuggets of something for everybody with two guests, Dr. Judith Owens, a pediatric sleep expert and the director of sleep medicine at Children's National Medical Center, and Hillary Frank, some of you may know and read and listen to, the creator and host of the podcast, The Longest Shortest Time, which she calls a 3 a.m. bedside companion for new parents. Did you know there was a podcast specifically for you? Hillary, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Owens, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
And Hillary, your podcast, The Longest Shortest Time, you call it the 3 a.m. bedside companion for new parents. What have you found are new parents' biggest concerns when it comes to babies and sleep?
Failure is the biggest concern. I mean, you know, when you have a little baby and you're walking around and strangers come up to you, one of the biggest questions you get asked is, how is the baby sleeping? And if the answer is no, you think, is it my fault? And I think
what do you mean no? What's no? Is meaning if, sleeping through the night or sleeping in 5-6 hour stretches by the time they're 3 months old, or what's here?
I mean, I think, you know, by the time a baby is 3 months old or 4 months old, we're expecting them to sleep in pretty good stretches, you know, maybe 5 hours or so. And if they're not, if they're waking up constantly to feed, or they're crying and you can't get them to fall asleep, you know, you can't, or even, you know, up to, you know, 10 months, a year, over a year, if they're not sleeping and letting you sleep, in a pretty good stretch, then you feel like you've failed.
Is there a medical definition of failure, Dr. Owens?
No. I think it's really it's a parent-created definition. But, you know, I will say that there are a couple of really important things to keep in mind. One is that infants really aren't physiologically capable of, quote-unquote, sleeping through the night until about 3 months of age. And that's when we start to talk to parents about setting the stage to allow that to happen. Another huge misconception is about night wakings. And the most important reason why night wakings occur in young infants is because they haven't learned to fall asleep independently at bedtime. And so waking through the night is perfectly normal. We all do that on a regular basis. But most of us, you know, roll over and go back to sleep. But the infant who has only learned to fall asleep under certain conditions, i.e. being rocked or held or fed by a parent, needs those same conditions to fall back to sleep during the night. And that's a real aha moment for a lot of parents once they make that connection.
So don't do anything you don't want to have to do for the next 3 years.
Absolutely.
You look a little skeptical, Hillary Frank.
Well, I mean, I talk to a lot of people and, you know, there's all kinds of conflicting information out there, advice out there of how to get your kid to sleep. And I think there are people who would say to the doctor that they've tried all of these things. They've tried all of the methods out there, tried what she suggested, and they still can't get their kid to fall asleep.
Tegan in Pearl River, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling with two questions. My first question is, we put our children to bed really, really late by toddler standards. We have a 2- and a 4-year-old, and we put them to bed pretty much between 10 and 10:30 is when we can say they're actually asleep.
When do they wake up?
They wake up usually sometime between 8:30 and 9:30. But that's because my husband doesn't come home from work until like 8 or 8:30 at night, and he would never see the children if we didn't keep them up late. But some people just admonish us for this and say that it's really taking them away from the rhythm of the day, and at this age they should really be just waking when the sun wakes. And the other thing is, should we stay with our kids until they fall asleep, or should we be teaching them at this age that we're, you know, just staying in the room with them, or can we, you know, can we move toward like kiss goodnight, turn off the lights, you know, see you in the morning? Because right now we are teetering back and forth between those two methods.
Dr. Owens, you are going to give her your blessing on the bedtime, right, under those circumstances, and then she can play the tape for all her friends?
A guarded blessing. You know, well, the literature really suggests that a bedtime much later than 9 o'clock for young kids tends to result in their not getting sufficient sleep. Now, if, you know...
What does the literature say about not having a relationship with your father?
Well, that's, you know, that's the trade-off, and that is totally legitimate, and it's a very, very common issue that we face all the time. And so there needs to be a balance. Most young children will wake very early in the morning, 5 or 6 a.m., and if they're hardwired to do that, it's pretty difficult to change that.
But to be clear about this case, Tegan, you did say they're waking up 8:39 in the morning, right?
Yes, that's right.
So doesn't that change the script entirely? Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of an unusual situation, but if you're able to keep them asleep that late, then you're probably okay for right now. The problem will come once they start going to preschool or kindergarten, and if they have to get up in the morning to get to school, then you might run into more of an issue them not having an opportunity to get enough sleep.
There's that 2-year-old now in the background.
Right.
I hear that baby. Wakes up in time for the Brian Lehrer show. That's good. And Tegan, yeah, you'll run into that, right? I guess your 4-year-old is not going to full day pre-K. And when kindergarten starts next year, then, you know, you're going to have to get your kid up on the school schedule. Have you dealt with that?
Well, that's kind of funny that you ask, because we came very close to enrolling her at the local Waldorf kindergarten. But I think part of the reason we kind of decided to hold back for one more year, besides the money, is just the man that getting up really, really early so that they could be somewhere from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 a.m.
Right.
When our family's rhythm right now is, you know, we're finishing up our first bowl of cereal around 11 a.m.
Right.
And, like, you know, having our leisurely breakfast. And so she goes to a preschool where she goes from 1 to 6 p.m. three
uh-huh.
times a week. And that works out great for our schedule right now. So,
yeah, that's great that you have that flexibility. I wish more schools had more schedule flexibility, but that's another show. Tegan, thank you very much. Lauren in Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I listen to you every day. This is so odd. But
thank
nevertheless,
you.
My question was, I have a 9-month-old. My pediatrician recommended that I wean her because she loves to nurse at night, and I'm getting little to no sleep. But the bizarre thing is that I do have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. Actually, it's not bizarre, but the fact is I didn't have this issue with them. But with Gabriella, she likes to nurse at night. So I don't know what to do. I don't want to hear her cry during the evening to prevent from nursing her, because either way, I'm going to lose sleep, whether she cries in the evening or whether I nurse her in the evening. So
Hillary Frank, okay, here we go. You have tackled this. Let them cry it out or nurse on demand. Question on your podcast, The Longest Shortest Time, and I say this is probably the most discussed podcast after you talked about someone who tried a version of Cry It Out, talking with a no-cry parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the Cry It Out parent, and I talked to a no-cry parent, and we had a very civil discussion about it, in which she told me that if she didn't really know who I was, she would have probably judged me for doing that. And I wound up saying something that now I sort of regret saying to her, which is that I felt proud that I had sort of felt like I created a good sleeper by, you know, by doing Cry It Out and having this be successful.
Did it work?
It did work.
How many nights did you have to put up with the wailing tugging at your heartstrings?
What am I doing
to my baby?
Yeah, like honestly, it probably went on for a week.
Just a week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Who's saying, oh, my God? That's Lauren?
I'm here.
A week feels long. Are you saying that because a week feels long? Like, how would I ever stand this for a whole week?
It's extremely long. Like, I couldn't imagine her. Because my fear is that if she cries, then she's going to then wake up her brothers. And they have to go to school, so it's not just, you know, she's in this solitary room all by herself at soundproof. Granted, they're in a separate room. They have their own room. But nevertheless, I don't want them to have to suffer because I'm trying to get some sleep as well. So
Easter break is coming up. The brothers could. No, I don't know. So, Dr. Owens, let me get you to weigh in on this. Are you a fan of what they call Ferberizing for Dick Ferber, who I guess actually hates the term, that is letting the babies cry it out and training them that way? Or do you think there's real medical evidence one way or another, either that this does actually train the babies to put themselves to sleep or that it traumatizes the babies?
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, by about 6 months of age, a healthy full-term baby no longer needs to be fed during the night. So I want to put that out on the table because I think sometimes that's an issue. So this has now become a learned behavior. In terms of changing this, and you know, whether you call it Cry It Out or the Ferber method or the checking method, there are more draconian ways of doing it, like the Cry It Out. You close the door and you don't return to the bedroom until the following morning. Most parents can't tolerate that. It works.
Yeah.
It works very well, and it works relatively quickly. But most parents opt for a kinder, gentler approach, and that is usually involves some check-in. So leaving the baby, coming back at periodic intervals to reassure the child, and eventually that translates into them falling asleep independently. There is no evidence to suggest that there is a long-term psychological effect. And in fact, there was a study published just about 6 months ago, which followed kids out for 5 years and looked at those that had experienced a cry it out approach versus not addressing the sleep problem. And they looked at every possible, you know, parent-child interactions, stress, cognitive levels, you name it. And there was absolutely no evidence of a detriment.
My fear of poor attachment.
Lauren, what?
Of insecure attachment, a poor attachment. That's what my fear was. That she doesn't feel that she's being coddled quickly enough, and so it will thus then lead to possible poor attachment.
Right, and Dr. Owens, that's why they call the opposite of what you're describing attachment parenting.
Well, but there's no evidence to suggest that this kind of it's a very short-term approach, has any detrimental effect on attachment whatsoever.
Lauren, are you newly motivated?
Slightly.
Just more conflicted. Thank you. Hillary, go ahead.
I've never talked to a parent who did cry it out or some version of it that regretted it.
Xavier in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Oh, wait, I have to tell everybody, in order to keep us on the right side of the law here with the FCC, that this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, also WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio, and if I don't say that every hour, near the top of the hour, they're going to make us broadcast from a pirate ship somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Now, Xavier in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call there. My problem is, we share basically a one-bedroom with my toddler. He's 3 years old, and basically we're going back and forth to his bed. He falls asleep on his toddler bed, and at the middle of the night, he'll come back to our bed. And so basically it's the back and forth. So what's the best advice that you could give me if we're sharing the one-bedroom?
Dr. Owens, back and forth into the parent's bed, into the baby's own bed. Well, this is a three-year-old, you said, right?
Yes. Well, we have also the one-year-old, but she stays in the crib, and she's no problem.
Yeah, it's a common and a very challenging situation. If you can create a little bit of a separate space within your bedroom, and that might be with some sort of screen or, some way of cutting off the ability to visualize what you're doing in the other part of the bedroom. That's not going to necessarily prevent your child from getting out of bed and attempting to come into bed with you. The real, it's not a trick, issue here.
That I'm having with my wife, she doesn't want to let go into us moving into their living room, or you could say create that space. So basically doing my wife, not letting go right now. Is that healthy for him?
It's absolutely key that you both be on the same page, because if one parent is a little bit more lenient and allows the child to come into bed with them sometimes, that gives a very mixed message to the child. So the most important thing here is consistency. However you're going to handle it, you both have to be doing the same thing, and you have to do the same thing every time. Because otherwise it's going to be very confusing for your daughter to understand what the rules are. And if the rules are you can't get into bed with mom and dad, then that has to be made absolutely clear every single time.
Good
and
point
she's
about
gonna, she's going to push it.
Good point about consistency. Xavier, hold on a minute. My producer wants to ask you a question. But Xavier, you'll be relieved maybe, or at least feel like you're not alone, to know that this can often cause conflict and that different people can't agree on what's the best thing. Here are two people we talked to about family bed recently, and I'm sure their stories will sound familiar to you.
So usually in the morning, I wake up and I find my daughter on my husband's side of the bed, and he's not in the room anymore. And I walk over to her room and find my husband, 6'3", in this toddler bed, designed for someone 4 feet and under.
Oh, it was horrible. Family bed is like one-way street to divorce town.
You know, when she was two, it was kind of cute. It felt like a family bed. Now, when she's almost five, it kind of feels like a dysfunctional family bed.
So Hillary Frank, creator of the Longest Shortest Time podcast designed for parents waking up at 3 in the morning with their babies. These guys are not alone, right? The ones we heard in the clip, those parents who at first were super into the family bed, the co-sleeping with an infant thing. And then next thing you know, your child is 4 years old and still sleeping in your bed, won't sleep in their own bed, and it feels impossible to get them out.
That's right. And I hear a lot of people starting this of women who work full-time wanting to just have time in the night to connect with their kids, and then it becomes often a conflict, like you said before, between the parents.
Advice, Dr. Owens?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a slippery slope there, and you know, I don't have any inherent difficulty with the family bed if that's what parents decide that they want to do. And presumably, the child is going to transition to their own independent sleeping space before they leave for college. But that that interim period where you're trying to address this and reverse the process is very challenging. There's no question about it. But there's no reason that you can't do some of the same things that you do with younger children in terms of checking method, setting up rules. The nice thing about working with kids that are a little bit older is you can start building in rewards for staying in your own bed, sticker and star charts and things like that, which really do help with the whole process.
And maybe we're conflating two things here when we say family bed. One is that sort of pretty natural and widespread tendency that people have to have the infant in the bed with them. I guess there's a whole other discussion about whether there's a risk of smothering and suffocating. But that it kind of, you know, makes sense in and out of the bed, especially if the baby's nursing a little baby in the bed. And at what age do you take those sometimes difficult steps of easing them out when they don't want to get out? The other, Hillary, is I think a more philosophical family bed declaration that people make, and then they do keep their kids in the bed. They get a huge bed. I don't know if there's anything bigger than king size, but they get a huge bed and they try to sleep as a family.
Sure. Yeah, I hear about people doing that. And then also a lot of people are embarrassed to say that they do it. Yeah.
I think that's a very important distinction, and we call it sort of family bed versus what we call reactive co-sleeping. So those are the parents who bring the child into bed as a response to a sleep problem. The child is unable to fall asleep or wake frequently during the night, and kind of rather than dealing with it, parents will just allow the child to sleep in bed with them. But they don't really want that to happen, so that becomes much more of a problem.
We're talking about parents and children under four and sleep as part of our April month-long look at sleep in our area throughout WNYC in our series here on Wednesdays in April on The Brian Lehrer Show. Sleep cycles through the life cycle. We'll do adolescence next week and continue on from there out through the elderly at the end of the month. We're talking today with Dr. Judith Owens, pediatric sleep expert and director of sleep medicine at Children's National Medical Center, and Hillary Frank, the creator and host of the podcast, The Longest Shortest Time, which she calls a 3 a.m. bedside companion for new parents. And we asked this question on the profile section of the Clock Your Sleep Project at WNYC.org/sleep. We asked, if you're a parent of a child 4 years or younger, how often are you woken up? And of the 41 parents with a child four and under who answered that question, 5 say almost never woken up, 15 say 1 to 2 times per week, 11 say 3 to 5 times per week, and 10 say 5 to 7 times per week. Poor you guys. So people, go answer those profile questions. It helps us figure out the data and understand what's keeping people up and what could help us all sleep better. We'll follow up with programming after you go to WNYC.org/sleep. And Catherine in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning, Brian. I'm a great admirer of your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a I have two children, two girls, 7 and 3. I'm concerned about the 7-year-old, but I'm asking the question about the 3-year-old, really. The 7-year-old slept 4.5 hours since infancy, since the hospital, really, since birth, and never slept more than 12 hours per 24-hour period, even as an infant. And at 2-year-old, she told me that she didn't want to sleep because she had too many things to do. Now, she is only, I am concerned about the relationship between sleep and growth, because I understand that children sleep, you know, grow more during sleep, and she's only in the 5th height percentile. Now, I'm just wondering whether this perhaps lack of sleep by traditional standards is causing this. We've done all sorts of tests, and there's nothing wrong. And I'm concerned about that for the 3-year-old because I don't want to repeat the same mistake if I did make a mistake with the older one.
Dr. Owens, is there any medical connection between sleep and growth?
You know, in theory, there is, because growth hormone is primarily released during deep sleep, or what we call slow wave sleep. However, what happens if a child, or an adult for that matter, isn't getting enough total sleep, the way that the body compensates for that is to actually increase the relative percentage of deep or slow wave sleep. So I think it's very unlikely that this kind of situation would cause slow growth. And it's probably much more influenced by genetics than it is by sleep amounts. Now, having said that, not getting enough sleep on a chronic basis does have other potential health repercussions, probably the most important of which is an increased risk for obesity. And that's true even in very young kids.
Catherine, good luck. Dr. Owens, you've said that if you start by putting the baby to sleep drowsy but awake from 4 months on, you'll probably avoid having to do any formal sleep training at all. What does that mean, drowsy but awake?
So the idea is that the last thing that the infant remembers or experiences as they're falling asleep is not something that they can't access during the middle of the night. So you want to put the child down when they're they're ready to fall asleep, and that's usually pretty obvious with most kids. They may yawn, their eyelids are drooping, they look sleepy, so that you improve your chances of getting them to fall asleep relatively quickly.
But then if you follow the drowsy but awake model, then the child's own biological clock is going to be determining sleep time, and maybe they'll sleep all afternoon and be up all night, or is that not really a risk?
Not really. I mean, by the time an infant is, again, about 3 months of age, they shift from sleeping pretty much in the same pattern all around the clock. So, they sleep for 3 hours and they're up for 2 hours, sleep for 3 or 4 hours all throughout the 24-hour day. But at around 3 months of age, they became capable of shifting most of their sleep to the nighttime period. And then they have shorter, more discrete periods of sleep during the day that we call naps.
And Hillary Frank, I just want to get one more piece of storytelling from you, because I read that infant sleep problems can lead to depression, that it doubles the risk of depression symptoms in mothers if children are having sleep problems. I wonder if you're hearing that from your podcast listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, I posted this question to the moms group I have on Facebook, saying that I was coming on here, and basically everyone who responded saying that they had a question for the sleep expert today was just basically saying, I'm going out of my mind. I am not getting any sleep. My kid's not getting any sleep. They're screaming. I'm screaming. I don't know what to do.
So, Dr. Owens, let's end with this. Advice for those going out of their mind, either figuratively or actually starting to suffer from clinical depression?
Well, certainly get help. Postpartum depression is a very real entity, and yes, certainly infant sleep problems can contribute to that. But, you know, if you're really feeling completely overwhelmed, stressed out, and depressed, seek out some help. Get other family members to take over some of those responsibilities. That's, of course, more challenging if a mom is nursing. But I think it's really important to put this in perspective. And when you have a newborn, it's really hard to ignore your own needs. And it's important for parents, particularly moms in these situations, to really attend to that as well.
Are there lasting health effects of being sleep deprived for a few years?
Well, as I mentioned, weight, obesity risk, and we're beginning to understand more and more that there may be risks in terms of cardiovascular health, in terms of an increased risk for high blood pressure and stroke. And so, I don't want to be too alarmist about it, but on the other hand, there may very well be a price to pay in terms of mental and physical health.
On next week's show, as we go through the sleep cycle in different stages of the life cycle, we'll talk about adolescence and sleep. And you can still join WNYC's Clock Your Sleep Project to track your own sleep with over 3,000 other listeners. Go to wnyc.org/sleep. And when you go there, be sure to fill out the profile questions. Your answers to these questions will really help us get better data on what's keeping you up at night, because this is a community data project, and we'll see what we can make of it. And we'll help figure out what might help you sleep better. Dr. Owens, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Hillary Frank, thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, two sides on the controversy over the company LG building a headquarters that would be the first building to peek out over the tree line above the Palisades. We'll talk to former Governor Christy Whitman, who opposes the project, and then an LG vice president. Stay with us.